Welcome to the NHL Wraparound Podcast, featuring Neil Smith, President, General Manager of the 1994 Stanley Cup champion New York Rangers, and longtime ESPN NHL veteran Vic Morin. Together, they share no-nonsense opinions on news and issues around the National Hockey League. Whether you're a casual or diehard fan, each episode of NHL Wraparound will leave you more informed. Now, here's your hosts, Neil and Vic.
Welcome to NHL Wraparound. Vic Morin along with Neil Smith. Just a week and a half left in the regular season. The Westfield is all but set. And then throw a blanket around five teams going for the last two playoff spots in the East. Special guest today, the co-host of the Real Kipper and Born podcast, Nick Kiprios, will join us to talk New York Rangers and also 31 years since a Canadian team last raised the Stanley Cup. We're going to talk to Nick to see if that drought can possibly end this spring. But first, take it away, my Gray.
From Howe to Hughes, from Béliveau to Bedard, we're your source for game-worn jerseys. Go to mygray.com, MEIGRAY.com to start your collection today. Get real. Get it from iGray.
Welcome back to NHL Wraparound. Time for our one-timers. Mr. Smith, the floor is yours.
Mine's more of an observation, really, than a statement or a rage or anything like that. But it seems to me that people think that things can change easily in the NHL, and when the season starts, anybody can get in, and if you get in, anybody can win. But what you might not realize at this point in the season is that compared to last year's final standings in the East, only one team has changed, and that has been at this point, New Jersey is bowed out of the playoffs, and Detroit is struggling to stay in the playoffs. And without that change, that's the only change there is from the teams that made it last season to the teams that are making it so far at this season. Over on the Western side, you've got more change. You've got the Vancouver Canucks, who are well out of it at this time last year, and the Nashville Predators, who didn't make it last year. And instead, you had the Minnesota Wild, who was in, and the Seattle Kraken, who are well out of it this year, who were in the playoffs last year. So two swaps on the Western side, one swap on the Eastern side. Vic, that's not a lot of change from year to year when people think, I believe that, you know what, anybody can make it. And if you make it, anybody can win it, and all that kind of stuff. It really isn't the kind of change that you would think.
No, it isn't. And one of those teams that will be returning to the playoffs this year is going to be the Dallas Stars. And in a year where we really don't have a super team like we had with Boston last year, but we have a dozen really good clubs in the NHL that have a really good chance to win the Stanley Cup. But of all these clubs, there's probably one that gets less publicity than Dallas does. You know, they made a little bit of noise right before the trade deadline. They acquired Chris Tanev from Calgary, but then all the publicity kind of went quiet after that. The Stars had a really interesting weekend. They had what I would refer to as a trap game in Chicago Saturday afternoon and lost, and then traveled for a back-to-back in Denver on Sunday night. And they had to play against an Avalanche team that's trying to catch them for first in the Central. They had to play at altitude and also combat the speed that the Avalanche had. And sure, they gave up over 30 scoring attempts in the third period, or shot attempts, and they iced the puck 11 times, but they bent, they didn't break, and they showed us what they were all about. They have a mix of experience and youth. That's the way the club's been built by Jim Nill. They've got great balance, 820 goal scorers. And by comparison, the New York Rangers, who we're going to talk about shortly, only have five players with more than 20 goals. They can roll four lines. They got three excellent pairs of defense. And they got a pretty good goaltender in Jake Oettinger. So for you astronomy fans out there, the stars of the third largest constellation is Ursa Major. That means Great Bear. And for any team that's going to face the Dallas Stars in the playoffs, this is going to be a bear of a team to try to get out of the tournament. This one-timer segment has been brought to you by the Ninsel Wealth Partners. Our goal is to be your primary source of financial advice. Our mission is to provide quality strategies customized to your needs. We recognize that you place your trust in our ability to help you achieve your goals. To us, there's no greater honor, and without question, there's no greater responsibility.
And now it's a lot of fun and a pleasure, actually, to bring in Nick Kypreos, an old buddy of mine from our 1994 Stanley Cup team, the New York Rangers, somebody that was in Hartford right before that. We met each other in around November of 93 when he came in a trade to the Rangers with Steve Larmer, one that sent Darren Turcotte and James Patrick back to the Hartford Whalers. To Paul Holmgren was the GM at that time, Nick, and we've known each other ever since, and it's really a pleasure. You've had such a great post-playing career. It's a pleasure to be together on this.
Well, thanks, Neil. Thrilled to be here in terms of our history together. And now I know you and Vic are kicking butt in the podcast world, which is was welcome because you've got so many great stories, not just obviously ours in 94, but your association with the league, being a president, all of that. Great storytelling time for this next generation coming up.
It sure is. I wanted to ask you, Nick, though, about our old team. You know, one that you and I obviously follow closely because of our finger on our right hand or left hand that has that Ranger Stanley Cup ring on it sometimes. There's been 30 of them since you and I were there. You don't need to include my teams after you left. But you could. There's been 30 teams since the Stanley Cup team. Every year, of course, Ranger fans hope that that's the next team that'll win the Cup. Where do you see this year's team, this team that's on its way to win the President's Trophy? Where do you see it in Ranger history, in their ability maybe this year to do what we did? How do you see them?
Well, first of all, it would be a great timing as we close in on our 30th anniversary from our Stanley Cup. It's crazy to think that it's beyond half of what we experienced after 54 years. So they go by very quickly, as we can attest to today. But I like the team, and I like it enough to say that, you know, not necessarily why the New York Rangers to win the Stanley Cup this year, but why not? When we look at what's going on in the NHL, and yes, there's still some probably more powerful teams in the West that we can make strong arguments to win another Stanley Cup, including Vegas Golden Knights to repeat, although the standings don't necessarily show that over 82 games. But I think the Rangers can be right in there for sure in terms of the talent, in terms of Shesterkin being considered still one of the best goalies in the world. They've been battle-tested a little bit here, coming off a very disappointing first-round exit last year to New Jersey. Does that make their skin thicker here moving forward for the likes of Panarin, Zibanejad, Fox here, Kreider? But, you know, we'll have to wait and see. Over 82 games, they've proved worthy to be one of the best producing teams over 82 games. But we know, Neil, from our experiences, the real season starts, you know, third week in April. And we'll see if they're ready to step up. But I like the depth. I like the toughness on the blue line. And, of course, Shesterkin will be the key in all of this.
I have a question regarding stylistically, though, with this team, because the Rangers like to go a lot of lateral, a lot of diagonal passing. And I wanted to know from your perspective whether there's enough north-south straight line attack mindset that this team can actually win 16 playoff games over the course of four rounds.
Yeah. Well, I think today's game probably a lot more than my era, our era, Neil, has east-west. And it's up to the Rangers and guys like Panarin, You know, Lafreniere obviously is coming on strong here, but those type of players now have to have that quick reflexes of when to get it in deep and when not to turn the puck over 3 feet inside the blue line, 3 feet outside the blue line. Those are battle areas in the playoffs that win and lose you playoff series, or ultimately can help you win a Stanley Cup. If they can start picking their spots better on when to have that style of play that you're talking about, Vic, then there's some growth there. But getting in it deep, making teams come at you 200 feet, those are cliches that are still there very much today. So we'll again see the growth over the last year on the disappointment of being knocked out in the first round to being ready to go to a conference final or a Stanley Cup final or win the whole darn thing. But they're deep. And Lafreniere, to me, Neil, watching his growth over the last 6 months, 12 months, where he's come from as a first pick overall to where he's now in today, you know, with some chemistry with Panarin, man, he could be a difference maker in and of itself.
And we know that New York is such a hard place as a rookie, as a draft pick, even to come in and be able to be there and given enough time to develop your skill set, because it seems like New York just wants to always replace you with a veteran guy. So they got to hurry up and get there so that they don't give you the time that they've given Lafreniere. They have given him some time. They've given Kako some time as well. But he's a totally different player. Nick, I want to get on, though, to some other opinion from you, because one of the things that we're going to watch closely, everybody is how the play of Artemi Panarin in the playoffs. You know, he's been a disappointment in the playoffs so far. I mean, and I don't mean to pick on him, but he is by far their best player this season. I mean, him and Shesterkin are the guys that you would point to. You know, your thoughts on him and this upcoming playoffs, because this is really going to be a make it or break it, I think, for him in the eyes of Ranger fans, because they've been waiting for him to produce in the postseason like he does in the regular season.
Yeah, it's just a matter for me is the growth, the maturity. Guys like Panarin, we know there's about 15 or 20 of them that are just, you can argue, or you can make no argument that they're the most talented hockey players on the planet. Panarin is one of those. But to win in the playoffs, Neil, you got to have some real leadership and some real growth in your character. And I hope that that's happened with Panarin, that he's not just ready to make himself better, but make people around you better. And, you know, to a certain extent, maybe that we've seen that with Lafreniere, that he's now taking more of a responsibility. Listen, we had the very best in Marc Messier, and those are there's just no comparison when it comes to being able to step into a room, say something, do something on the ice, and have it ripple amongst your room. Mark was so good at that it would go far beyond 20 guys in the dressing room. It would go to the training staff, the coaching staff, administration, Tommy, who did our laundry, whoever it was. He had that ripple effect. Panarin has to be that guy, you know, along with Kreider and Fox. They have to. It's just not good enough that you're just good enough. You have to make everybody around you better. And we'll see if Panarin's ready for that next step, because that's also a big X factor when it comes to winning and losing a key series or winning a Stanley Cup. Is Panarin ready to be that guy that says, I can't do this without all of you, so either I'm going to just do or say the right things and we're going to ride that wave all together here.
Nick, every Stanley Cup team appears to have a horse. Nathan MacKinnon was a horse on Colorado's team, Mark Stone last year. And you can go back to, you know, the Steven Stamkos or Nikita Kucherov on Tampa Bay. But is Panarin cut out to be that horse, or is it Kreider, or is it Zibanejad, or is it Adam Fox? You know, is there that one guy that you could say, okay, I'm going to take you on my back here?
Yeah, I think they're all capable, right? But, you know, when we talk about, a true horse in the playoffs, for me, it has to be a guy that can play heavy. A guy that can go and it's not running people over. It's just leaning on them and just being tired of constantly having this guy come at you. I remember, you know, Brian Leach describing me what it's like to play against Yager. And Yager wasn't a guy that was going to go through the boards to put you in your first three rows. But he was a heavy guy where you just got tired of him leaning on you and protecting the puck. And for me, my first thought goes to Kreider. Here's a guy that certainly plays a big game on the power play. We know what he means in front of the net, the redirects that we constantly see. But he has to be that heavy guy that that the six of the defenders go, oh, man, it's going to be a long night here. With a guy like that. But, you know, for Kreider, the key is the consistency. Bringing it every other night in the playoffs is really hard. You know, Kreider's had that reputation of being maybe amongst the best player on the ice. But is it once in every four games? Is it once every three? Or can it be once every two games in the playoffs? If you can bring your A game 4 out of 7 games, you've got a chance to win a series here. And for me, Kreider has to be that guy.
You were just talking about you don't have to be a player that runs guys on the other team, but they do have a player that is actually earmarked to do that in Matt Rempe. And he's become somewhat of a cult hero in New York.
I've noticed, Vic. We've all noticed.
We have noticed. But the reality is, do you see a realistic fit for him in Peter Laviolette's playoff lineup?
I think it's if it is, it's hopeful, right? There's just not enough sample size to say definitively, like, I'm penciling this guy in and I trust that he can get in on a forecheck and I can trust that he can turn the pucks. He can get the D to turn the pucks over, or he's making people nervous. Right now, he's still a project. To me, it's still very early in the development phase. And I'm not suggesting, too, that, you know, if the Rangers find themselves in a situation where they're not getting in on a forecheck or they're down 2-1 in a series or 3-2 or 3-1 in a series and you need a shot of adrenaline, you need some life, you need something to hurry up the team that you're playing against. Yeah, it's there for him, but right now he has to be an add-on. He can't be a guy that I'm is going to be a make or break for us here. He's got to be positioned in a place where he can succeed, not necessarily fail. And that means, you know, does it put too much pressure on him to start him in the playoffs? Yeah, maybe you got to wait it out a little bit here and see where it goes. Injuries are a factor here, as I know, because I played in, against the New York Islanders in the first round, and then I didn't play until Game 7 in the Stanley Cup final. You never know when your number's being called upon. You never know when you got to step up there and the reasons why. All you need to know is that when my number's called, I'll be ready. And does Matt Rempe have the discipline now to go in on a forecheck and absolutely make sure elbows down and tucked, shoulder, you know, am I getting more body than head? The last thing Matt Rempe wants to do or needs to do is go clip somebody 5 in a major and potentially lose a series because of it. So I'm a huge Matt Rempe fan. I've loved everything he's done so far. You know, when we're putting a 21-year-old up against a 30-year-old that's seasoned like McDermott, you know, and he can hold his own, man, oh, man, I think there's tremendous upside for this kid.
Nick, this is great stuff. I want you to, you wear jeans, right?
I do, yes.
Everybody does. Well, wait till you hear this when Vic talks about his doer jeans. Right now, Vic's going to walk you through the kind of jeans you should have.
You've heard me talking about all of the experiences that I've had with my door jeans thus far, going out to dinner, traveling, games, meetings, doing taxes, etc. Added to that this past weekend where I crossed state lines going from Connecticut to Massachusetts to wear them at a birthday celebration. Door jeans is the go-to, and you're going to want to own your own pair. Door's stretch performance denim and lifestyle apparel is designed for all-day comfort and durability. Door's denim is antibacterial, meaning less washing. And Door clothes are sustainably crafted to last, so they'll be a staple in our closets for years. We absolutely love our Door jeans, and we know you will too. Check out Door's flagship stores in LA or Denver, or shop online at shopdoor.com/NHLfan. Right now, our listeners can get 20% off site-wide only at our exclusive URL, shopdoor.com/NHLfan. Don't wait to get 20% off. Go now to shopdoor.com/NHLfan.
Well, now we got Vic acting like he's a Canadian here with the throwing on a Canadian hat.
Hey, Neil, now you pay him 70 cents on the dollar, too. You got to pay Vic the Canadian rate right now. He's not going to be too happy.
No, yeah, you're going to see me shaking a can on the street real soon. So,
yeah. And Nick, you know all about that, living up in Canada and then trying to come down to the States, right? And have some fun in the States with a dollar that's only worth 65 cents. I wanted to ask you, since you're in Toronto, my hometown, your hometown, I sort of get a little bit frustrated or wondering, you know, you and I, we had to listen to that 54-year thing. I mean, I was there a bit longer than you when you got there, but I from 89 until that night on June 14th, 1994, I had to listen to the 50 year, 51 year, 52 year, 53, and then the chanting, every building, whether they'd ever won the cup or not, were chanting 1940. And you know, you and the rest of the players ended that, thankfully, for the Ranger fans. So now we move to Toronto, your hometown, my hometown. They haven't won since 1967. I was old enough to watch that game. I don't think you were. And they get away with this. Like, it's been 57 years. Are they getting away with this? Like, they're not getting treated like we did.
Yeah. No, it's a real interesting question or comment, Neil, in terms of, you know, is there pressure in Toronto, or is it beyond that where it's just a running gag, a punchline? Right. And that's where a lot of people feel. And the majority of the rink, Neil, is still doesn't have a Madison Square Garden feel where it's like still like, and I get it. I get the big money in New York, and I get how expensive the tickets are there too, but they don't present a game like they do in Toronto, where it's just a Bay Street feel up here. And that, you know, there isn't that much pressure on them to win or to end this drought that's coming close to 60 years here in Toronto. And it's one of those things. Is there pressure or is there not pressure? But a lot of people are leaning towards you in terms of saying that, you know, there's not that demand that says you have to end this now, and they may be able to slide year after year here, continue to be a punchline, and everybody goes home happy. But it's going to run its course because there's a huge generation here in Toronto that will not be there to pay for the tickets anymore. They're going to retire. They're going to sell their companies, and I'm not sure necessarily the next generation of kids will want to spend $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 on tickets like their parents did or their grandparents before that. So it's interesting times here. Neil, in terms of moving forward for the Toronto Maple Leafs?
So move west, if we're talking pressure, and that maybe in Toronto, they're just happy to sell tickets and they're, like you said, willing to just ride this out for however long it is. But if you go to Edmonton, the urgency level has to be higher then, because, you know, Connor McDavid only has another couple of years on a contract, and Leon Draisaitl becomes a UFA, I believe, after next season. So is the pressure markedly different for the Oilers to be the team to end this drought in Canada?
Yeah, we do feel it here in Canada that if anyone feels the most pressure, it would be the Edmonton Oilers. And, you know, here in Toronto, where I'm living right now, like, not too many people remember 1967, but certainly people in Edmonton can remember Wayne Gretzky, Mark Messier. Those are still modern day heroes in Edmonton. And there's a bit of that ghost that Connor McDavid has to come to the rink. Many people have watched telecasts out of the Edmonton Oilers, and they have to leave and arrive between each period, going by all the Stanley Cups that are on display the moment the dressing room doors open and close. So that in itself can put a ton of pressure on Connor and Draisaitl and all of them, you know, this spring. But Connor's been there now for a very long time, little success, and there's no question that he understands, much like the other greats have understood, guys, that, you know, you do not want to be regarded as one of the best hockey players in the world and not have a Stanley Cup. It's such an exclusive group of the Marios, the Wayne Gretzkys, the Beliveaus, go back as far in history as you want. But to be regarded as a great player, one of the best in the world, is one thing. To lump it in with also you're a champion, you're a Stanley Cup champion, you had the recipe of success, stands alone. And Connor is not in that group. Auston Matthews is not in that group. Ovechkin just got in it in 2018, if I recall that the right year. That's what makes the greats special. That's what's stopping Connor McDavid, and that's what he has to get through.
You're absolutely right, Nick. And in our era, it was Eric Lindros, who, another Torontonian, who unfortunately for him was never able to accomplish that with the teams he was on. So as great as he was, and he was great.
Gilbert Perreault comes to mind for me in Buffalo. Marcel Dion comes to mind for me, and a former Ranger, but best known probably in his heyday as a great Los Angeles King. It's hard. You know, Neil, I will never forget. This image is burned in my head for the rest of my life, watching seconds after. Then there's a very famous shot of Trevor Linden on his knees with his hands over his mouth the moment that they lost game seven and we had won. And I had jubilation beyond control, the greatest thing that ever happened to me, just moments. And out of the corner of my eye, I can see him on his knees with his hands over his mouth. And that feeling will never leave him, ever. It'll always be as fresh as the moment it happened. So this is what some players have to deal with when they don't experience a championship. And I'm so blessed that I played a small part in feeling that. But for those great players, without a Stanley Cup is a huge void. It's a bottomless pit in your stomach. It's a hole in your heart. That's why these special moments that the Rangers will have, or Edmonton will have, or Toronto will have, to be one of 16 teams in the playoffs, you can't let those moments slip. You just don't know how quickly they'll come around again.
Well, let's talk about another star in the NHL today that has a chance to win a Stanley Cup this year and hasn't won before is Connor Hellebuyck on Winnipeg. And along with Mark Scheifele, those two guys signed long-term contracts. And we had Kevin Cheveldayoff off on here on NHL Wraparound talking about the Winnipeg Jets earlier in the season and about the really transformation that he made with the Jets in the fact that he let some people go. He got a new captain and then signed Hellebuyck and Scheifele to long-term deals, and actually was very complimentary about how much those two guys wanted to win a championship with Winnipeg. And what do you see for the Winnipeg Jets?
Yeah, much like the Rangers, we talked earlier about is that they're right there in the mix, and their best player on the team is their goaltender, which is a really good thing this time of year. You know, I don't get sometimes this 1A, 1B can flip flop. You need a stud goaltender. You need a guy to go this time of year and just shut the door down and just have that confidence that resonates right in front of him from the blue line on out to the forwards. And Connor Hellebuyck does that. There's no question he's the favorite to win the Vezina this year. His numbers are off the charts. But he's also, I think, one of those players that we can look back in this kind of time, this modern time, and go, that's one of the better goalies in the league in this type of era. But he also has a lot to prove this spring as well, that he can carry a team, that he's worthy of being an $8, $10 million goaltender, as all the great ones are at this time. He needs to be to Winnipeg what Vasilevsky is to the Tampa Bay Lightning. There's just no two ways about it. But if he actually finds himself in a conference final or a Stanley Cup final, I would not be that surprised because he's been that good.
There's one other club from Canada that's making the playoffs that has had a bit of a drought and this year has been right up at the top of the league standings. And that's the Vancouver Canucks, who from really the first week of the season when they dismantled Edmonton in a pair of games has really left a mark. What do you see from them in the postseason?
A chance to go in and maybe make some noise. As great as the season's been for them, and let's make no mistake about it, nobody had them on their bingo card to be one of 16 teams. I certainly didn't. But knowing Rick Tocchet the way we know him, Neil, we shouldn't be that surprised. This guy's a winner through and through, played like a winner, he's coaching like a winner. He gets it. He gets the big picture. He understands teams. He understands dynamics in a room, on a bench, dynamics on the ice. So no real surprise there. But based, Vic, on where they are in the last month, I'd probably say that they're going to go in as underdogs.
With Thatcher Demko possibly Demko returning to start the playoffs?
Yeah, I don't know if he's as ready as Hellebuyck to carry a team. I really like him a lot. I think the upside's phenomenal on him. He's coming off an injury. We'll see how quickly he can get going again. Can he steal a series? Absolutely. You know, Jake Ottinger in Dallas, the last few years has to be Dallas's best player. And Demko will be that guy for Vancouver if they can make some noise. But when you look at the big picture for Vancouver, where they were in September, where they are today, where they could be in April, it's been nothing but upside here. They don't have the pressure of the Edmonton Oilers or the Toronto Maple Leafs in saying that. I get the fickle fans there. They want it now. They want success now. They've tasted too much success. Will it be a disappointment if they lose in the first round? It shouldn't be based on where they've come from. But I think it's all upside for the Vancouver Canucks from here on in.
Last one from me, and I'm not going to so much ask you to look into your crystal ball as much have a gut. Any of the four teams, realistically, in your opinion, can win the cup this year? Or are we going to wait into a 32nd year before a Canadian team lifts the Stanley Cup.
Yeah. At this point, I think Edmonton would have the best chance out of any team. I'm not convinced that the blue line is still good enough for the Edmonton Oilers. I would have liked to seen one more legit top four type of guy added. They went and got depth guys up front in Carrick and Henrique. But I probably would have liked to seen one more guy that could legitimately play 18, 20 minutes a night and step in. It's all about the depth. Neil in 94, Doug Lidster, God bless him. He came in and plugged a hole. And that's what it takes this time of year. I don't know if they have enough depth on the blue line. But in saying that, where Connor is right now, where Dreisaitl is, where Zach Hyman, to score 50 goals, to have that presence in front of the net, they look like they're ready. They look like they're ready. Evander Kane has to step in and become a bigger piece in the equation here for the Edmonton Oilers. But out of the four, Vic, if you ask me, I think not only me, but a lot of others up here would tend to say that Edmonton would probably have the best chance.
Nick, when you're talking about Vancouver Canucks, I just had clearly in my mind your video that you made during the finals. Nick had a camcorder with him the whole final, and there was no phone recorders back in 1994, and he had the presence of mind, Vic, to take a camcorder with him everywhere he went. And the part I'll never forget, and Nick, you're going to be surprised I remember this, is you're in the hotel room with Tikkanen, and he's looking out the window with his camcorder going, they're out there celebrating something they haven't even won yet.
Yeah,
you remember
that's
saying
right.
That?
Oh no, it was on our balcony, and of course we were up 3-1, and now we're tied 3-3, and the city's on fire. Literally, they were celebrating, they were burning things. We could barely get our bus from the arena back to the hotel, Neil, if you remember that, and I got my camcorder out, and I'm like, "What are you guys celebrating?" So
it took me 2 hours to get back from Pacific Coliseum to our ESPN hotel. So I think we were all sitting in traffic that night, and I had the same feeling you did. Was like, you haven't won anything yet, and that was just this celebration and really the precursor to major disappointment. Yes.
Nick, though, I'll never forget that, because it was during a time when nobody else was doing that stuff. And we all do it now because we've all got our phone in our pocket. But back then you had a camcorder, and that was really cool. And the thing that I remember, the words from that thing.
Yeah.
I'm even surprised at that. But before we let you go, you've got a fantastic podcast. You've been doing this a long time. The podcast is called Real Kipper and Bourne.
Yes.
Can you tell us about, especially tell us about Bourne?
Yes.
That's not the Bourne from the movies, right?
No. But on occasion, everybody calls him Jason Bourne. So that's the Matt Damon character. Of course, it's Justin Bourne. For those of you that don't know, he's the son of Bobby Bourne. Of course, New York Islander, great dynasty years. So he grew up in that New York area. He understands Islander championships. He understands Ranger Islander rivalry. And, he's much younger than me, which sets up for the podcast because, if I get labeled old school, he's new school. He's analytics. He keeps me a little bit young. We also have a producer, Sammy McKee, who's a diehard Leaf fan. So I make sure that, Leaf fans are well represented through him. So it's been a lot of fun. Of course, I did over 20 years of Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada. Long nights, no weekends off. This one sets me up from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern. That's also run nationally on Sportsnet here, the Fan 590. You can download us on YouTube as well. Or you can watch us on YouTube. You can download us on Spotify or wherever you get your pods. So it's been a ton of fun. No question. Sometimes I go, okay, what am I going to talk about every day for 2 hours? Believe it or not, it's not difficult at all because we're all passionate hockey fans that love the game. So you mix it in with a couple of stories, even the ones in 1994. And, you know, it's been a pleasure, you know, being a co-host of this show.
And the show called, again, for those that don't know about it, that might be in the United States and not know about it, Real Kipper and Born. I am suggesting strongly you give it a listen and you'll probably subscribe right away. So thanks, Nick, for coming on with us. And that's been a real pleasure. You're so insightful, so good at this stuff. I mean, you make us look like amateurs, yeah. That's for sure.
Thanks, Neil. And we'll see what happens with those Rangers.
Yeah, we sure will.
Yeah, keep up the great work, guys. Vic, pleasure, pal.
Thank you very much for joining us, and hopefully we'll do it again real soon.
Time now for a quick shout-out to our sponsor. NHL Wraparound is brought to you by MyGray, your source for game-worn jerseys. Head to MyGray.com to get your collection started today. Get real. Get it from MyGray. NHL Wraparound subscribers can take 10% off any hockey jersey when they order at MyGray.com and use the coupon code WRAP10. Don't forget that coupon code WRAP10.
This is the human side of the story brought to you by UBS Financial Services Incorporated. Neil.
You know, Vic, it came to my mind this week when I was watching the games and seeing various things that go on during any NHL week of hockey. And that is that underneath those uniforms, those beautiful uniforms that the players wear on all that equipment that they wear is a human being under there and a person who has parents, brothers, sisters, sometimes a wife, sometimes children. If they're older in the league, meaning not real old, but if they're not very young, and all of these people get affected by the career of that player. Underneath there's just the same person that you and I are, that everybody is. They just happen to have athletic ability in hockey. So when these guys get traded, when they get hurt, when they get concussions, when they lose games, when they win games, when they score goals, when they don't score goals, it all has an effect on the human being underneath that uniform that the people don't see. They think that, I know there's a lot of people that think that when they see their favorite player coming down the street, he'll probably be wearing that Rangers uniform as he walks to get into a cab, or be wearing an Islander uniform or a Devils uniform or a Nashville uniform. But no, he'll be having on a suit and tie or casual clothes just like you and I wear every day, because you know what? At the end of the day, he's just like us. He's just another person trying to do a job, which is very high profile and entertaining. And you have to keep that in mind when you think about players and the life that they go through and the ups and downs and the traumatic experiences that they have. There's great euphoria, a great downside too, to this game of hockey. And so we should all keep that in mind when we do judgments on these players and say things about them, that at the end of the day, they're all trying to do the best they can. You're all human beings. They all have families that are affected, just like you and I.
And those are such great points. And, you know, speaking of judgments, who are judged more in hockey than the officials? And I think we got a little bit of a dose of reality on Saturday that officials are human too. When in the Pittsburgh-Tampa game, Hayden Fleury of the Lightning collided with referee Steve Cazzari in center ice early in the third period of that game. And Cazzari was not called and had to be stretchered off the ice. And we all know what a game of emotion hockey is in the early part of the season. And now that we're getting towards the playoffs, everything gets ramped up that much more. And I know over time, in the 55 years I've been watching hockey, I have been ticked off at referees. You have been ticked off at referees as a general manager. And hardly a game goes by where you don't hear crowds in all 32 NHL arenas yell, "Refs, you suck." But we got a reality of what life really is about on Saturday when Kazari was lying prone on the ice. You know, they're the third team out there, but I think people need to know that they, like the players, are human as well. And we all got a stark reminder of that on Saturday.
Vic, you couldn't be more spot on about the referee in the game. The other day when Hayden Fleury ran into him, a great big guy, Hayden Fleury is on defense. He had to leave the game as well and couldn't come back. But the referee, to see him go off on a stretcher, that was really a very difficult sight. Give the players of both teams a lot of credit, though. All of them jumped on the ice and surrounded the referee. They all know at the end of the day that the referee is just another one of them. It's just another guy out there trying to do his job in a very entertaining and special league, the National Hockey League. But certainly, if you didn't think of referees as human before that, you certainly certainly should after that. We've got to close the show right now and say thank you to our sponsors, Migre, UBS, Dewar, and Minsel Financial Partners. Thank you all for being so kind and being behind us every week. Thanks to the listeners. Listeners, if you have any questions, please send questions or comments to nhlwraparound@gmail.com. Join us again next Tuesday when we'll be right on the verge of the playoffs starting. We probably will know a lot more about who is going to be in those playoffs. We might even know some of the matchups. But for now, thank you for listening and have a great week.
Thanks for joining us on the NHL Wraparound Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to stay up to date on all the NHL action.